From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Fascinating program in store on 2012 in just a few minutes. Last hour of the program tonight, Michael Salla joins us as we get his reaction to the Vatican trying to study the possibility of extraterrestrial life. Here's what's happening. Well, federal officials are now saying that 4,000 or more Americans likely have died from the swine flu, about four times, they say, the estimate that they've been using. The new higher figure includes deaths caused by complications related to swine flu, including pneumonia and bacterial infections. Until now, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention had conservatively put the U.S. swine flu death count at more than 1,000. The CDC says many millions of Americans have caught the flu virus since it first appeared in April. Now, I want to put some things into perspective here. First of all, they're now saying 4,000 people have died in this country from the swine flu since April. If you use that as a barometer, April through now, approximately 18,000 Americans have died from the so-called normal flu, because the CDC numbers are 30,000 to 36,000 people die every year from the normal flu and the normal flu-related illnesses. So that's about 3,000 people a month. Now, let's accelerate that a little bit, because many of them die during the flu season, not during the seasons where you don't have the flu. But on the average, 3,000 Americans die every month because of the normal swine flu. That would put that at about 18,000 compared to the 4,000 they say have died already from the swine flu since April. Put it in perspective when you hear these numbers. Well, the company that we all know as Verichip Corporation has changed its name following a merger. It is now called Positive ID Corporation. Catherine Albrecht is a consumer privacy expert, and let's check in with her about this name change. They bought a company, I guess, Catherine, that is now dealing with health and security identification, aren't they?
Yeah, you know, this is crazy stuff, and we've of course got all of our information about the Verichip Corporation up at antichips.com. We've been following these guys for years now. This is their fourth name change in 10 years. This company just can't seem to keep the same name. It's been Applied Digital Solutions. It has been Digital Angel. It has been the Verichip Corporation, and now they've got this brand new name, Positive ID. You'll note that each of their names, at least this new name, has kind of kept that creepy sort of reptilian eyeball logo right there in the O of the positive. They've now still got that kind of circle with that cat's eye thing inside, which is, I'm supposed to represent that little microchip in the middle of the circle. But yeah, they've acquired a company called Steel Vault, which was not a big company to begin with. And their new plan, these are the makers of the implantable microchip, their new plan is that now they want to be also the kind of company that protects your identity. And so what this means is that customers, I mean, this is like the last company, George, I got to say, that I would give all of my information to, you know, your social security number, your date of birth, all of your credit card numbers, all of your bank account numbers, so that they would, quote, you know, keep that information safe. Not only would I not trust this somewhat bumbling company to keep that information safe, but I wouldn't want those people having that information about me in the first place. So certainly got a lot of investors puzzled, scratching their heads. And the other thing I would point out for people is, if you take a look at the value of their stock, it, you know, this is not the mark of a legitimate company when their stock value goes from 24 cents a share at the low end to $11 a share at the high end, and it's like a roller coaster ride for these investors. And the reason for that, George, is because this company keeps coming out with these press releases. They're the master of the brilliant press release. They'll say, hey, we've got a glucose sensing chip. And then when you actually look, you realize, well, we have some blueprints and we're thinking about doing it, but we don't even have a prototype, and we've never managed to deliver on any of our previous promises. They're still selling the same old tired dog chip that they've been selling for 10 years. And every new crop of investors, they come in, they give them all this money, they'll boost the price way up, and then they'll drop it down again. You know, this company has never made more than $10,000 a year selling implantable microchips, and yet it manages to pay its CEO between $7 and $9 million a year.
What?
Go figure where they're getting that money.
Unbelievable.
They have a new investors.
They have a new logo, and it looks good.
Well, you know, but take a look at that O in positive. It's a reptilian eye. It's the eye of a snake.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Catherine, thanks so much. Keep an eye on this for us. Catherine Albrecht, her website is on our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. A U.S. Army major suspected of shooting colleagues at the Fort Hood military base in Texas last week will face 13 murder charges. Major Nadel Malik Hassan, 39 years old, was shot by police and remains in hospital. He has refused to speak to the investigators. The major, an Army psychiatrist, was said to be unhappy about the prospect of being deployed to Afghanistan. The Colorado parents, who reported that their 6-year-old son floated away aboard a helium balloon, will plead guilty to some charges so the family can stay together. The father will plead guilty to the alleged October 15th hoax and attempting to influence a public servant, which happens to be a felony. Banks will have to secure your consent before charging large overdraft fees on ATM and debit card transactions. The rule responds to complaints from consumer groups, members of Congress, and other regulators said that the overdraft fees are unfair because many people assume they can't spend more on a debit card than is available in their account. Instead, many banks allow the transactions to go through, and then they charge fees up to $25 to $35. For small purchases, like even a cup of coffee, the penalty can far exceed the actual cost of the transaction. Carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is a natural phenomenon caused by volcanoes and is not responsible for climate change. According to a scientist, Professor Ian Pilmore, a geologist from Adelaide University, argues that a recent rise in temperature around the world is caused by solar cycles and other extraterrestrial forces. Don't get excited about that part. He said carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, widely blamed for global warming, is a natural phenomenon caused by volcanoes erupting. Robert Felix, not by fire but by ice, and also magnetic reversals on the line with us. Robert, I guess you would tend to agree with the scientist, wouldn't you?
I sure would, that the CO2, I don't agree that the CO2 causes the warming. The warming happens first, and then the CO2 increases. But yes, there's a lot of CO2 from volcanoes.
And we can see what's happening just throughout the solar system, as some scientists are reporting that some of the other planets are getting warmer, right?
They're getting warmer, and there's also a cycle where we get warmer and colder. I have a graph on my website. The graph is called Pacemaker of the Ice Ages.
And which of your two websites are we talking
about? It's on iceagenow.com.
All right.
But you can look at that graph. It goes back for 450,000 years, and temperatures have gotten warmer approximately every 100,000 years, and then we have descended rapidly into an ice age. And so we're just following that same 100,000-year cycle. It's nothing new. It has nothing to do with humans.
Okay.
Now, I do agree with the volcanoes because at the entry to previous ice ages, volcanic activity increased tremendously. And right now we're looking at volcanic activity that's the highest that has been since about Christopher Columbus. So there's something going on, yes, and some of that CO2 is certainly coming from those volcanoes.
Well, and as you've always pointed out, Robert, volcanoes that are under the water, they tend to heat up the oceans, and that changes things as well. Robert Felix, thank you so much. Up next, Whitley Strieber joins us as we begin our special report tonight on 2012. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Now, Whitley Strieber is our first guest this hour. The next hour, Bob Gleason will join us, and we'll be chatting about 2012. And then in our final hour, Whitley will take phone calls. Bob may stay for that. Whitley, of course, author of many best-selling books, including Communion and The Superstorm, written with Art Bell. His novels, The Grays in 2012, The War for Souls, are both being made into films. Grays expected to be a blockbuster when that comes out as well. Whitley with us tonight on Coast to Coast as we talk about 2012. Hey, Whitley, how are you?
Well, it's good to be back, George. I'm just great. And incidentally, my book, 2012, The War for Souls, has nothing to do with the 2012 movie that's out, Roland Emmerich's
right.
movie.
Some people think that's your movie.
I know,
yeah.
But it isn't. I only have this to say about the movie. Read my book.
Well, and one of the reasons, isn't the director of 2012 the director of The Day After Tomorrow, which was based on your book?
Yeah, absolutely, it is. It's the same director. And I hear 2012 is a terrific special effects movie, but I'm not an advocate of the idea that the world will end on December the 21st, 2012. So, you know, I'm hoping I don't get too identified with that idea.
Well, it's Hollywood. Anybody who goes to see the 2012 movie, put that in perspective when you're looking at it. I've seen the trailer, and it is unbelievable.
Oh, it's very exciting. All I can say is this. I haven't seen the trailer, but I have seen a big ad in one of the papers I read this morning, and it was darned awesome to see a Tibetan Lama standing on the top of the Himalayas watching a tsunami coming. that did it. I thought, this must be a fairly major catastrophe.
I thought I saw the highway I traveled in Los Angeles crumbling in the trailer.
Well, it's no question the movie's going to be a lot of fun. But let's not forget, that's what it is, a lot of fun. It is not a movie about an expected reality. NASA's even got a website up about it that's sort of sensible, a little garbled in there. They don't really know very much about what they're talking about, but I think that the evidence that December the 21st, 2012 is in fact a day that will be a day that will end all days. It's not clear that that's the case, and not too many of the researchers I've talked to believe that. It'll be interesting to see what Bob Gleason's take on it is, but
yeah.
At the present time, we are certainly in a time of major change. There's no question about that.
You know, Whitley, yesterday we had a story that an asteroid came within 8,700 miles of the planet. You also had it on unknowncountry.com.
Yeah.
This is pretty darn close, Whitley.
Well, you know, let's talk about that a little bit, because there's some quite interesting material. And I guess the kind of overall thesis, in my opinion, is this. We are in a time, and over the course of the evening, we'll get into this more and more in detail, where there is a lot of change going on in our solar system. The Mayan long count calendar happens to end on December the 21st, 2012, and it's rather interesting that this particular calendrical change, which is a profound one in the Mayan calendar, would take place during a time when more and more change is actually emerging in our solar system. Now, last summer, in July, Jupiter was struck by, there was a major strike on Jupiter.
Mm-hmm.
But not as big as the Shoemaker-Levy comet, but certainly much bigger than anyone would expect so soon after Shoemaker-Levy. Then shortly thereafter, a big object went slamming through one of Saturn's rings. Then we observed a glowing area on the surface of on the visible surface of Venus, which is of course the top of the cloud layer, since Venus is completely covered with clouds. And whether this represented something going on the surface because an impact had occurred, or it was some kind of gigantic volcanic effect taking place on Venus, we don't know. We didn't see anything hit Venus, so we can't be sure. But then subsequently, there have been now four objects that have come within anywhere from 215,000 miles to Earth to the most recent one, 8,300 miles, and one that exploded over Indonesia. It was an asteroid about 20 feet across that exploded with a force close to that destroyed Hiroshima. Now, I hasten to add that an asteroid that size, 20 feet across, is almost certainly going to explode in the atmosphere harmlessly. They need to get above 30 feet across. But here's a good question, I think. It's a very reasonable question to ask. Where are these things all coming from all of a sudden?
And they're unnoticed, or they know that they're there within a few days.
Maybe
they're not giving us much warning.
This the Indonesian one, there was no warning.
No warning at all.
No warning at all. And the reason is this. There's two reasons. First, our near-Earth observation is of limited I mean, if it wasn't of limited effectiveness, we would have seen them.
Right. And most, Whitley, as you know, are spotted by amateur astronomers, not the pros.
That's right. And these are not being spotted partly because they're small, relatively fast moving, and partly because apparently their reflectivity is low. In other words, they're not reflecting a lot of sunlight and they're hard to see. Now, their size so far, it's larger than you would like, but the one that ended the age of the dinosaurs was 6 miles across. Now, that would be very, very bad news if that something that big showed up. Hopefully it won't. But frankly, with an asteroid passing this planet 8,300 miles away just yesterday with almost no warning, the answer is yes, we could be in for a strike pretty much at any time, obviously. And I think that there ought to be a little bit more consciousness in the media about the fact that this is happening. But people, no one wants to alarm anybody. Everyone wants to say, if you ask NASA scientists, they'll probably say, this happens like this all the time. But it's not true. It doesn't.
Well, and when we talk about alarm, too, you know, I was looking at the CDC as I led the show with what they say now are 4,000 swine flu deaths. They said they had been reporting 1,000, but they've upped it. Now, this is since April, Whitley. So since April, we've had 4,000 swine flu deaths. But if you take the average number of people who die from the regular flu, that number would be about 18,000. And the mainstream media doesn't report on that. They don't say, now, folks, you know, don't panic. Even though 4,000 died, 18 died, and we don't say anything about it. 18,000 died. Why do they do that?
Well, because they don't know.
Yeah.
You know, they're basically what happens is they react to the latest set of press releases that come in, and there's not too many media outlets left where people actually think about what they're doing, and so the result is you get. Like each asteroid that shows up, it's like it's the first one. It takes a very good quality media outlet for anyone there to even know that this has been happening more than once or twice recently.
And most of those seasoned pros are retiring or they've been bought off.
Yeah.
And they're gone now.
And the reason is that the whole business is not generating enough money to keep people. It's tragic. I mean, it's like a light going out in our lives, and we don't realize it. So it is unfortunate that that's the case. I don't personally know too much about the swine flu. I haven't perceived it as being too significant a problem because I'm not seeing the kind of pandemic effects that you know you would normally get from something. It's not nearly as bad, for example, as SARS. Hopefully it won't mutate and turn into something serious. I think it's probably going to, you know, reach a crescendo next month or so and then fade away.
Well, do you think the Mayans, for example, everything that they put together for their calendar and the end date was all based on cosmology, or was it also based on, you know, calamity, disasters and diseases and things like that?
This planet has had and has a very unstable life. Because of the fact that geologic time is so huge, it doesn't feel that way to any given generation that doesn't happen to experience one of these catastrophes. But in fact, they are quite frequent. I'll give you an example of something fascinating. There's a book that was written in 1990 called The Cosmic Winter, where a couple of an astronomer, Bill Napier, and an astrophysicist, Victor Klub, worked backwards from calculating the meteor showers, the Taurids, the Perseids, the Pisces, the Orionids, and some very large objects, the comets Encke and Rudenke, a couple of asteroids, Olatunji and Festos, I believe. I'm talking from memory here now. Mm-hmm. And what was so remarkable was that they found, using some sophisticated computer software that all of these objects and all of these meteor showers are offspring of the same massive comet.
That's scary. Whitley, stay with us. More to come with Whitley Strieber in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie. Well, next hour, Whitley's editor and my editor, Robert Gleason, joins us, who happens to be the author of Apocalypse 2012. We're going to talk with him about 2012 as well, and more with Whitley when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We've got Whitley Strieber tonight on Coast to Coast. Whitley, what kind of changes are you seeing out there, specifically on planet Earth, that could be related to what the Mayans were talking about?
Well, on planet Earth in particular, of course, there's a lot of change going on. What happens here is intimately connected, as is all the solar system, with what happens on the sun. And right now, the solar wind, the solar atmosphere, has contracted dramatically because the sun has been so quiet, with the result that cosmic rays are coming into the solar system 50% more than they were just a few years ago. At the same time, Earth's magnetic field is getting weaker because of the fact that without the solar wind, Earth's magnetic field also tends to contract. So cosmic rays, more intensity, are reaching the surface. Now, these are not rays. Mm-hmm. They're actually individual protons. They're called cosmic rays, but it's a misnomer. It should be called a cosmic proton shower or something. In any case,
now these aren't X flares, right? Or are they?
No. These are the actual cosmic rays, and we cosmic rays come from any number of different energetic sources in the universe. Supernovas cause them. Last year there was an article in Nature magazine, the science magazine Nature, about a dark matter object somewhere out there that is bombarding us with cosmic rays. So they have a lot of different origins. The point I'm making, though, is that we associate cosmic rays, intense cosmic ray bombardment, with evolutionary changes, because they would, like any kind of radiation, they're flying through the bodies of all the living creatures and altering DNA, and so we could be experiencing something like that right now. You know, we have this complicated global climate change situation.
Yeah.
And in Superstorm, I might add, by the way, that just recently, it was in fact just on November the 11th in the New Scientist, an article was published saying, and I quote, "Just months, that's how long it took for Europe to be engulfed by an ice age. The scenario, which comes straight out of the Hollywood blockbuster The Day After Tomorrow, was revealed by the most precise record of the climate from paleohistory ever generated. This happened 12,800 years ago." And I seem to remember Art and I getting laughed at an awful lot and scorned by not only by environmentalists, but by people who thought global warming was nonsense and didn't really understand. We weren't talking about that. And not only that, it says here, "It was triggered by the slowdown of the Gulf Stream." And that's exactly what Art and I had identified as the cause of the superstorm back in 1998. But because we're not scientists, we're not given credit for it.
When those ocean currents start to warm up or cool down, this planet starts doing weird things.
Doing weird things. Right now, for example, there's a cooling process taking place in the Pacific Ocean that is cyclical. At the same time, it's being intensified in two very unexpected ways. First, the sun is far quieter now than we ever expected it to be. And second, the recession has caused a dramatic decline in the amount of carbon dioxide being emitted by human beings. So it's a triple whammy in terms of cooling. it's going to get cooler here before it gets warmer. So much for global warming.
Exactly. And, you know, if a 100-foot-wide meteor asteroid hit us, or meteor, and it hit a city on this planet, 100-foot-wide, it would be devastating.
Oh,
first
yeah.
thing every first thing everybody would do in the morning, planet-wide, Whitley, would be, I'm glad it wasn't my city, and it would probably be the biggest story of the year.
Well,
on
it would be
all
the
media.
Biggest story of many years if the whole city
I
was evaporated.
So. Just gone. Just
yeah.
gone. That would tell the world just how vulnerable this planet is. And, I'm sure they would then kick up an early warning system, which they've kind of been lagging behind.
Well, you know? they probably ought to do that. And I'll tell you why. That in the last segment, I talked about the book, The Cosmic Winter. It's a very important book for this period, even though it was published in 1990, by an astrophysicist and an astronomer. And tonight I'm purposely not going in the direction of the of edge scientists, because I don't actually need to talk about these changes. Now, what they are saying is that this mega comet passed Earth close 12,600 years ago. This caused the deaths of 40 million animals, including all of the mammoths, all of the mastodons. It killed off all of the people in North America entirely. The whole Clovis culture disappeared. There was a gigantic flood when the Laurentide ice sheet collapsed, a flood that covered, if you can believe it, North America from the Rockies all the way to New York. And in the process, that all of the people who were living here were killed. It was repopulated slowly over the next 2,000 or 3,000 years. Now, Earth crosses, according to their calculations, Earth crosses through the densest part of this comet, of the remains of this comet, about every 2,000 to 4,000 years. Now, they looked at climate and ice core records and saw this pattern. Iridium, helium-3, nitrate, and other key measurements rise and fall in tandem. Peaks coming 18,000 years ago, 16,000 years ago, 13,000 years ago when this happened, 9,000 years ago, 5,000 years ago when extraordinary things happened on this planet. Incredible things. The Egyptian Old Kingdom collapsed. Utsi the Iceman was running through an alpine meadow in the Tyrol, and he was either killed or overcome by a storm and found in still encased in the glacier as it was melting 5,000 years later. In other words, that alpine meadow was covered with snow that then did not melt for 5,000 years.
Jeez.
Now, that's in the Alps. In Peru, the same thing happened. The Bird Polar Research Institute researcher Lonnie Thompson found glaciers in Peru that had at their bases quick frozen plants, frozen so quickly their cells hadn't collapsed. In other words, they didn't even wilt. They're like frozen food that fast. And those glaciers are 5,000 years old. In a matter of minutes or even seconds,
it's like being
that cold.
It's like being tossed into a freezer
and
instantly.
Then the freezer never gets turned off again.
Never, yeah.
Never. Now, we are in another period. Klug and Napier predicted that in the year 2000 and continuing for 400 years, Earth would enter another dangerous time in which our planet's orbit would bring us into potential collision course with the densest part of the clouds containing some very large debris. And what do we see? What were we talking about now, just a few minutes ago, here in 2009? But an increasing number of objects appearing in our solar system, striking the planets and striking and coming closer and closer to our own planet. It is absolutely crazy that we are so lackadaisical about watching for these things now. Two excellent scientists predicted the need for this back in the 80s or back in 1990. And we're just ignoring them, and they're right. They were right then, and they're right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You have talked about the other galaxy and its effect on us. Tell me
now,
about that.
Isn't this fascinating. This is going to get into, to my mind, some of the greatest mysteries that we are now facing, involving 2012 and the Maya. And, you know, always kind of hanging in the back of my mind is the question of why did they calculate like this? Why did they choose this date if they didn't know something about it? And I just can't quite get to a satisfactory explanation that doesn't include some kind of extraordinary knowledge from the deep past. Now, we are there has been a study done of an infrared study of our immediate galactic neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been found that there is another galaxy that is actually in the process of colliding with the Milky Way.
No, that's Andromeda, isn't it?
No. Oh, well, no. Andromeda is not even close to colliding with the Milky Way. Andromeda is far from here.
Okay.
But the reason that this has been so interesting to scientists is that we're I'm having a little bit of a problem talking. I'm having a little cough here.
All right, just go ahead, cough.
You're going to have to give me just a moment.
You go ahead, do what you got to do, and cough it out. And
that doesn't really happen to me very often.
But
anyway, this other structure is called the Sagittarius Dwarf Galaxy. You've probably never heard of it before. Now, in the Astrophysical Journal, a paper in the Astrophysical Journal, based on a project that is surveying the sky in infrared light, suggest that we may be actually part of the Sagittarius Dwarf Galaxy in the process of entering the Milky Way, that we're not part of the Milky Way yet. And this is why one of the most interesting astrophysical questions out there is, if you look up at the night sky, not in any of these big cities, but where you can still see the night sky, the Milky Way is at an angle. Now, this is rather mysterious because it shouldn't be. We should be in the lens of the Milky Way, and we should be parallel. Gravity should have made our solar system parallel to the center of the galaxy like all of the other stars are. But we're not. We're at an angle. Could that be because we are actually entering the Milky Way? And if that's the case, we may be moving into an area of denser and more energetic plasma as we penetrate the lens of the Milky Way. You look at what's going on in this solar system. You see changes in light intensity on Neptune. You see polar shifts. Neptune and Uranus have shifted poles and increased magnetic field intensity. The magnetic field of Jupiter is in a state of strange flux and chaos. Ozone clouds have appeared on Mars, and the Martian atmosphere has turned out to be so much more dense that it is damaged at one orbiter because we didn't expect the atmosphere to be that dense. So you see these changes taking place, and I might add that there are suggestions of global warming on Mars, just like there are on Earth. So all of these things are changing, this are happening in this solar system, and I think it's quite possible that we really are part of the Sagittarius Dwarf Galaxy, and we really are entering the Milky Way now. And if that's the case, then astronomers who understood this could have calculated very exactly in the past, assuming 10,000 years ago or 20,000 years ago, someone could make calculations like that.
Yes.
They could have come up with a calendar like the one we see. And I don't get it, because who would they have been? Where were they?
I still think they might have had some ET help with somehow.
I don't know. Well, you know, you look at the what's left, the engineering feats. Sacsayhuaman in Peru, 30,000 perfectly matched stones go into that structure. They were carried a mile up the side of a mountain when the Spaniards wanted the Incas to show them how they had built their buildings. They couldn't do it. The Incas sent crews down into the valleys to bring rocks up, and these people all ended up getting killed trying to do it, and the Spaniards called the experiment off. Even the Incas had no idea how that had been done. That's only one. You go to Baalbek, to the platform, great platform at Baalbek, and the central stone in that platform is so enormous that right now we could lift that. We could engineer something to lift that stone, but it would take us years to build machinery that would be capable of moving it. We know the quarry, where it came from. It's not a secret. How did they move it if they did not know something major about the physics of weight that we do not now know? It's inescapable. Somebody in the past knew a great deal more about the world than we have given them credit for. I don't even bother to get into the Great Pyramid because everybody knows that. We could not build today something that is that precisely oriented toward true north and that is also that large. We couldn't.
No, there's no way. No. There's no way. Do you think we will see signs of whatever the Mayans were talking about as we get close to this 2012 date in December, or is it going to hit us that day?
I think that the 2012 date is probably, I don't think that it is a precise date. I think we are in a period of change, and there's substantial scientific evidence backing that fact up. It's not conjecture, and it's not supposition based on ancient texts or anything like that. It's hard science. It's a fact. Now, if it was hard science and a fact years and years ago, perhaps even before the Maya, maybe the Maya, this calendar was handed down to the Maya from the very distant past. After all, a few years ago, there was a French oceanographer who was studying the seafloor off the coast of Cuba with down-looking sonar, and she said that she had found evidence of a city at a depth of about 5,000 feet. Now, this was supposed to have been, the return voyage was supposed to have been funded by the National Geographic. Never heard any more about it. It seems to have just disappeared. But if in the distant past, in 12,000 years ago, this dramatic event did in fact take place, and the science is very strong that it did, that there was an enormous impact that took place then, an absolutely heart-stopping event that was so large that it caused the whole glacier to collapse in a matter of weeks. It was an unbelievably large event. It could have done things like caused the dramatic subsidence of areas that had been on the surface. We do know that sea levels rose 30 feet and more all over the planet when these glaciers melted. And this all happened very, very dramatically. If we had a civilization then that had a certain amount of advancement but was quite small and clustered along the shorelines of that era, it could have disappeared completely.
We're going to get Bob Gleason's take with Whitley when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM.